I'm Tom Bascom. I've been a Roaming Progress DBA and Progress user since 1987. Is there anybody in the room who was not born in 1987? Just checking.
This is a progress card.
Yeah. Hey, it could happen, you know. Maddie's close. I have a couple of hats I wear. Sometimes I'm the president of DB Appraise LLC. Sometimes I'm the vice president of White Star Software. Those are two versions of the same company. Adam and I just kind of switch off roles. But we keep them separate because DB Appraise does remote database management service, where we simplify the job of monitoring and managing the world's best business applications, which, as we all know, are open edge applications. And with White Star, we do time and materials consulting sorts of things. So, kind of a little bit of a difference. Anyway, we're not here to talk about me. We're here to talk about Protob. And to learn what it is, what it's good for, how do you use it, and how do you install it. But before we do that, I need a little bit of information about you guys. So, you're all DBAs? You sure? No coders? Any coders in the room? Okay, all right.
How about me?
Both? Yeah, both. Anybody who only does DBA work?
This is a progress conference.
Yeah, we got a few. We got a little group over here that is the pure DBA. It's kind of funny how you guys are all sitting together.
We're hiding.
Rob, I did not bring my special tool. How many of you are running something older than version 9? Excellent. Oh, we got a confession. How young?
We still have an old 8.3.
You got an old
G-Pro instance. Historical purposes only.
Okay, so you have more modern stuff. You just got an older database kicking around.
Historical, we have a 7 still.
Oh, a 7. Yeah. All right. I ran into a 6 a couple of weeks ago. Somebody called me up. They needed a little bit of help. They had a 6.3 database installed on Novell Network. Running great. Everything's fine. They love it. It's great. It's one of the world's best business applications. They haven't had any problems with it, but they're really worried that Novell Network server is going to fall over and die pretty soon. So I was helping them migrate off of that. So Protob, what's it good for and all that kind of stuff. So what is it? It's an interactive monitoring program for your open edge database. So it's a little bit different than ProMon in that it's very interactive. It automatically refreshes the data and keeps you up to date sampling the data as you go. It's kind of like a hybrid between the ProMon, which is focused on open edge databases, and the Unix top command, which lets you very simply flip around between screens and get different metrics and different views of what your data is doing. It's based on the virtual system tables within the Progress database. Does everybody know what VSTs are? Pretty much? Anybody need? Okay, we have. Okay. So the virtual system tables are they're pseudo tables. They're not real tables. So when you shut down the database, everything in them goes away. They're just a way of mapping the metrics that the database has in memory into something that looks like and mostly acts like a table. So you can write 4GL code against the VSTs to find out what's going on in the database. They're very powerful if you're interested in any kind of monitoring kinds of things. There's a whole bunch of them. Dan Foreman has a book that explains them all. So if you'd like a little more in-depth than what the manual gives you, talk to Dan, get his book, or go to Bravepoint's website. Yes, I'm pitching up monitors competitors' product here. But it's a really good book, and it'll give you some real good insight into how the VSTs work. And Protob also ties in some things that are not from the VSTs. It takes some of the metaschema data and blends that together with the VSTs to give you a more meaningful view of what's going on, as well as some external information that it might get from places like a DB analysis or some of the operating system metrics that are available on whatever platform you're running at. And the whole thrust of it is to try and give you that more meaningful view of things than just a simple VST browser where you do something like for each user activity, display user activity, which is interesting, but it's not as insightful as what you might get from a tool that's a little more focused. One of the great things about Protop is it's open source. So if you're wondering, how do you do that? You can just open it up and you can look, and if you can read my code, you can figure it out. And it's also free. So free is good, right? Anybody not like free? You're all good with free? Okay, excellent. There are a couple of different flavors of Protop. Protop's been around for quite a while now. I first wrote it in 2003, so we're like 11 years old. Protop Roman numeral 21 is based on version 9. It still runs fine on OpenEdge 10 and above, but there's only a character client. It doesn't run Windows GUI or anything like that. And it doesn't know about some of the newer VSTs in version 11 and onward. Limited support for new stuff. I'm not doing anything at all to upgrade it or implement it, but if you've got an older system, if you've got a V9 system and you need to have some insight into what's going on that, then you might want to download the Protop 21 instead of something newer. At one point I played around with this thing called Protop 2. It's written with 10.2a, and it has a .NET GUI for people who like mice. Does anybody like mice?
I like mice sometimes.
Do you like them salt and pepper or a little bit of ketchup?
Barbecue sauce.
Barbecue sauce. Okay, good. I'm not into mice. I'm a kind of a character sort of a guy, so most of my effort goes into that. But I did create this GUI thing, and it does work, and some people like it. They say it's pretty. I don't know why. That must have been Mike Fechner's influence because he helped me with it. But it's basically impossible to maintain and ship because every time the infragistics tools change, I have to go through a recompile cycle and build a new package and all that kind of stuff, and I don't have time for that. So if you're running 10.2a and you want a .NET product, there you go. Protop 3 is really an attempt to address some of that making it not dependent on the UI side of things. So the data collection agents have been split off from the UI, so they'll run on any platform independently of whether you want to run the character display or whether you want to run the GUI stuff. And the GUI piece of it is delivered via a web client application. So they're completely independent of each other. If you like that sort of thing, you can download the web client and fool around with that. You can use either an HTTP or a Stomp connector to get the data back and forth between them. Shortly, I'll be developing a Node Glue kind of connector for that. So if you were upstairs a few minutes ago, you heard a little bit about that. So those are kind of the various main versions of Protop that are kicking around out there. We have some new features in the Protop 3. The character client requires 132 columns and 48 rows. I'm sorry, but I'm all done with 24 by 80. Not going to do it anymore. Don't even bother to argue with me about it. If you have a PC that was created that was built in the last 20 years, you're perfectly capable of supporting 132 columns and 48 rows. There is, like I mentioned, the web client option for you, so you can download that and you can run with that. The data collectors communicate via shared memory if you happen to be running a character client on a Unix system. You can use Stomp on any platform, so the Stomp connector works everywhere. Progress App Server is supported, so we have an App Server way of attaching agents if you're into app servers. HTTP. If you're running Unix and Apache, I don't mess around with Windows and whatever that thing is that runs on Windows that isn't Apache. I don't even know what it is. And there's an actual install script. So when you download it, there's a PT3 install script that puts things in the right place, sets your variables for you, asks you a couple of simple questions like what directory are you putting this in, and then takes care of all the gory details, which is much nicer than the bad old days when you had to figure out which script do I have to go to edit the thing. That wasn't so much fun. So the old Protop looks like this. This is 80 by 24. You notice how crowded that is? You can't get anything on that screen. There's just hardly any information at all there. The GUI, this is the pretty one that you can use a mouse with, looks like this. A lot more information. You get a lot of stuff squeeze into the screen. You got this nice dashboard thing here that shows you everything you ever wanted to know. You got the user IO activity. You can sort by whatever column you want to. You can undock the windows and rearrange them, and you can stretch it and drag it. And I don't know. It seemed kind of neat at the time. The web client is very similar to the 10.2a .NET client. Looks very similar, a lot more room. You can do all the same things in terms of docking and undocking windows and selecting columns. You can change the refresh interval and all that sort of stuff. So this is pretty cool too. Or if you're like me and you're a dinosaur and you just can't get used to the idea that you might want to use a mouse, there's the character version. Isn't that great?
It works well.
It does. It works really well. Thank you very much. it's quick. It's easy. Most of the big back-end systems that I work with are Unix systems, but it works equally well on Windows. You just open up a character ProEnv window and set the, you know, you go to the layout thing and set it to 132 by 48, or don't feel like you're limited to 48. 96 is okay too. It will figure that out. It'll use all the screen. So when I'm at home, I have a 27-inch monitor, and my laptop just kind of connects into that. And so I'll set that window to 96 or 120 lines long because I can get a whole bunch of data. And you can see a whole lot of stuff going on, and you get a much better picture of what's happening with the system. So this is kind of what that looks like. Now, just to emphasize the point, this is 80 by 24 on top of... So you see how much more information you're getting. Wouldn't it be nice if your users would let you do this? Yes, it would. Okay, so what's it good for? It's really good for checking your configuration. So maybe you have a couple of different people in the office who are working on things, and some guy comes in over the weekend, and you're not quite sure what he did. So you want to check the configuration. So you bring up ProTop, and you look at all the major configuration items. Or maybe some consultant was in there messing around with stuff, and you want to know what you mess around with. It's great for development and testing. So sometimes you want to compare what the developer thinks is happening inside the database versus what's really happening in the database. They're not always the same. Developers, you don't always get it right. especially when it comes to things like index selection. A lot of times you find out at runtime that the indexes that are being used are not the indexes that you thought were going to be used. So ProTop can help you to diagnose and analyze that kind of thing. Identifying where you have performance problem areas. So some of the things in the dashboard here will change colors and give you clues that, oh, that's probably a problem. So that's always kind of helpful. Correlating some of the more scattered metrics. So there's a lot of metrics inside of ProMon that you have to go to this screen, and then you go to another screen, and then you go to a third screen. You got to kind of put them together, scribble them down on a piece of paper, or write a big script to dump them out into a text file or something, and then put them together. ProTop attempts to bring those together into a single view that gives you a more cohesive kind of look at that. Finding trends. So ProTop can help you to kind of see how the data is trending over time. Are your reads increasing as the day goes on? As the length of your transactions getting longer? Things like that. Drilling down. So you find a problem metric in ProMon. Maybe you notice that you have a very high read rate, and you want to see where's that coming from. So you bring up the table I/O and the index I/O screens and find out which tables and indexes are busy. And you discover, oh, that table is really busy. It's only supposed to be used by accounting. So you start looking at the users, and you see if those aren't accounting users. And so you might open one of those users up and say, oh, wow, that's what he's doing. That. Or because it's open source, if you're just interested in knowing how the VSTs work and how these things are put together, you can just crack the source open, and you can look and see how it's being prepared. So that's the kind of prepared talk. Now we're going to do a little demo. And I've been told that one should never say anything more to introduce a demo than watch this. So that's what we'll do. it's going to take a minute. I've got to shut down PowerPoint and flip over to the live system. But I have a connection to Well, I hope I have a connection to a customer's system. I asked the customer if it would be okay to demo this because it is production. Whoops, I guess I gotta actually make it visible to you guys. Displays. Arrangement. Mirror. There we go. How did that go away? Got a little bit of a mismatch between the monitor and the screen. So when ProTop first comes up, you get this nice splash screen here letting you know that these people worked on it. So I had a little bit of help. It wasn't just me. It was me and Julian Linden-Smith at .R. And Mike Fetchner from Consulting Work provided some of the technology that you see in here. What's happening now is when ProTop first starts up, it looks in a directory called DB Analysis to see if there is the output from DB Analysis for that database. If it's a very large database with a lot of tables, it takes it a little while to read through that. So this took, I think, 15 or 20 seconds. This system is, like I said, it's a live production system. There are 957 or so connections to it at the moment. Over here, we have the columns cut off, but the hit ratio is something that people often look at right away. So we can see it's 99.88. They're doing about 500,000 logical reads per second. OS, they're reading about 600, 700. 95,000 records per second, both of which are kind of high. So we want to draw their attention to that these numbers are in red because there's a lot of activity. Down the side here is the record activity. And then at the bottom, you've got resource weights, latch weights going on. Some commit information over here, commits and undos and stuff like that. How many locks we're currently using. So the lock table, as you can see, is set to 1,000,000. So there are periods in this company's business cycle when they need a lot of locks. I'm not sure who coded that, wasn't me, but they need a lot of locks sometimes. They only have a relatively small number of modified buffers. Nothing really exciting happening there. Their BIW write percentage is kind of on the low side. Not that that really makes all that much of a difference. The oldest transaction, this is something they have trouble with down there, the oldest transaction is currently 34 minutes long. So they have a user who's sitting on a screen executing a transaction right now and has been there for 35 minutes. They used to have people, they'd have dozens of people who had transactions all day long. So this has helped them to kind of get control of that. So 30 some odd minutes is actually pretty good for them.
What type of business?
This is a distribution business. They have a big warehouse and they ship all around Latin America. You can see that they're currently on their fourth AI extent out of 8. So we see that the AI process is working and things are going well. I cannot, with the VSTs, actually see which extent they're using, and because of the permissions, the file system permissions on this system, I can't open up those files. So I'm showing -1. If the permissions were set so that I had the ability to read those files, I might be able to tell you more. Over here, we break out of the connections, which ones are 4GL servers, SQL servers, 4GL clients, that kind of thing. It can be pretty helpful, particularly if you're having a licensing discussion. Mike Fergal will be talking about that later, but if somebody from Progress calls and wants to know about your licensing, it's nice to have some data about that. This is how many connections we actually have. This is what kinds they are. But some of the more interesting stuff is also the table and user IO activity. This comes up in the first kind of screen that you see when ProTop comes up. It shows you which tables are most active along with the dashboard. So we can see this AP trans table, they're reading 3 point some odd million records. I'm sorry, that's how many records are in the table. They're reading it about 8,000-9,000 times per second. So this is the table size out of the DB analysis. This is the activity. Turns is an interesting metric. This basically is saying how many times per second you read the whole table. As you can see, they have a table that has 19 records in it, and they're reading a lot. So 300 and some, you know, they read the whole table over and over and over. That's because of the architecture of this application. It's one of those applications that has a couple of small control table type of things that, that are constantly being referenced. If there was a way they could cache this, then they could improve their performance considerably. Some years ago, when they were on 10.2a, they had a bottleneck here. This was holding them back from being able to grow the business. And what we did to fix that was we put it in the alternate buffer cache. So we moved that table into the alternate buffer cache and more or less doubled their throughput just by making that one small change to that one small table. We don't need to do that anymore because they're on 10.2b08 and we've got the LRU skip mechanism active. So we moved it back to the normal buffer cache. Down here we can see who the most active users are and how their activity levels relate to things. So that's kind of the first set.
How are you defining active users?
By the number of database access. Well, it's sorted by number of database access. Yes?
The block activity is red and blue?
Yes.
And black, apparently?
Yes.
What's the significance?
Mostly it means I was playing around with colors.
Oh, okay. That worked for me as well.
But red is supposed to mean pay more attention to me. Blue is supposed to mean, well, I might not be exactly where you want me to be, but I'm not bad. there's a config file in the Etsy directory where you can decide what you want to do with the colors. You can give it thresholds and specific values that you want to trigger on. It's fun to play with.
Sure. How often does it refresh?
I think this is a 10-second interval.
Configurable as well.
Yeah, that's configurable. Lots of things are configurable, and that's kind of where I'm going to go in just a moment here. For instance, one of the things you configure is which column to sort by. So by default, it comes up sorting on reads, but if you were more interested in what's going on with deletes, you could sort by deletes. Or any of the columns, actually.
How does that affect performance then if it's refreshing?
Each of the refreshes is the agent side of things is doing that. The agent is actually very, I think it's very lightweight. I watch the agents sometimes from the operating system perspective to see how much CPU time they're using and that kind of thing. It's a very light impact. If it's a large system like this one, where you do have a lot of tables and a lot of users, then some things get multiplied. So table activity by user is, you know, there's 1,000 users and there's, I forget, but I think it's about 1,500 tables or something like that. So there's a lot of records that have to be processed for that. Within the agents, there in some places, there is some code to limit how far some of those searches will go. You can either decide, by default, those limits are in place. You can lift them if you want to look at everything. So let's take a look at the help screen. Be a good one to start with. So these are some of the options that you have interactive while you're in ProTop. So I type the question mark, as it says down here. That brings up the help screen. And then you get a set of keys that you can use. Basically, you just press the key and that thing will happen. So earlier I mentioned the configuration viewer. Currently, we're looking at the performance dashboard at the top. The configuration viewer shows you a lot of pretty cool stuff, so let's take a look at that. I'll get rid of the table and user stuff on. I said get rid of the table, and there we go. And you too, you can go away. All right, so I'm sorry, but the side of the screen here is cut off, so you can't actually see this, but this is showing you the database version. So this is an 11.3.2 database with the 64-bit executables. The database has been up for 85 days, 11 hours, and so on. The backup is only 8 hours old. If the backup by default, if the backup's more than 24 hours old, that'll turn red. Or if you've never backed up, you'll have a bad result there. Which is kind of cool, because a lot of people don't think to look at how old their backup is on a very regular basis. And if you've been missing your backups for some reason, you might not know that. So it's kind of good to have that in the configuration. This next one is the size of Big B. So they've got 5.75 million blocks of Big B. 4800 is spin. So spin's set to a nice four-digit number, close to the DBA's birthday times pi. The lock table we talked about already. That's how you set spin, by the way.
That's the new rule.
That's the new rule.
Now I have a new rule.
You can round it if you'd like. Anyhow, that works pretty well for these guys. So we've got the DB block size, the AI block size, the BI block size, BI cluster size, number of AI buffers, BI buffers. The database size is this guy. So it's 553,000, what is that unit?
Blocks.
Blocks.
Yeah, I think that's blocks. And they're 8K blocks. Allocated blocks, 374. So they've done a lot of growing into some variable extents here. but that's okay. That doesn't really hurt anything. The BI is as big as that says. BIT holds not set. No stalls going on. Dash N, we have right here. Servers and MA, they're not actually doing much with that. Those are default values. Message size is at the default of 1K because they don't have remote connections, so they don't need to worry about that. After imaging enabled, AI archiver could be running. Replication is enabled and actually running. Crash protection, obviously. We haven't had a forced start. So if at any point, if at any point you start your database with dash F, that's a forced start. Your database is tainted. There's probably damage to it. You'll keep running. So if that developer came in over the weekend and crashed your database and restarted it with dash F, this is a nice thing to know. Forgot to tell you about that. Bunch of other interesting stuff here. The index rebuild. So this is telling you that if the last time somebody ran an index rebuild, everything worked. So you don't have any issues with unresolved problems there. This stuff here is the prefetch features. So this mostly applies to people that are doing client-server connections. It's all disabled or at default values right now. LRU skips, I mentioned earlier, that's set to 50. This is a great new feature for those who are on 10.2.B.08. If you're not using LRU skips, it's a good one to toss in there. Save you a lot of trouble. So, a lot of interesting sorts of things. Okay, over here, the area configuration. So what this is telling you is a kind of a merged view of how did you set up your storage areas. Extended means that you are not using only the default schema area. So you have additional storage areas is what that's telling you. And then off the page, you can't really see, it says type 2. So that's good. There's nothing red up here. We have multiple storage areas. Step number one, and they're type two areas. Step number two, so good, somebody did the right thing here. The number of extended areas is actually more than three. It is, see if I can move this a little bit. Yeah, so 38 extended areas, 144 extents. The largest extent is 60 gig, so it's been growing. They're about to migrate, so they're not paying a lot of attention to some of these things. The schema area is clean, so that means there are no tables, there are no indexes, there are no lobs in the schema area. No objects have been accidentally put into the schema area. Rows per block is mixed. This means that they didn't just take the default, that somebody went to the trouble of setting the rows per block for each of those areas. Currently, there aren't any that are full that we're worried about anyway. These are, the one that's growing is exempt. AI areas have got 8, they're variable. We're on sequence number 100. The stat base and stat range, these are the, so in order to monitor the tables, you have to set a parameter called the table, table stat, what's the
table range size.
Table range size, thank you. Table range size and index range size. So this basically tells you what those are set to and how many tables you have. So they've added some tables and not increased the range size. So I got to call them up and say, guys, I think I had that conversation a couple of months ago. So they've got some things that are not being monitored right now.
Yeah, they haven't shut down their database yet. Change that, they got to restart the database.
It was, database has been up for 90 days, yeah. So that's the kind of information you can get from the config screen. It gives you a nice kind of a view of, a holistic view of what's going on in one fairly compact screen that is easy to pull stuff out of. Another interesting sort of configuration thing is to look at the storage areas. So the storage areas can be displayed, well, by people who are better with a mouse than I am. There we go. So you get the area number, the area name. Allocated is how big did you declare it to be in the ST file. And then along with allocated, you have the variable size. So you see this is the guy, it's the audit area that's growing. What a big surprise. The audit area is the one that's out of control. and you get a high water mark, free. And this percentage here is pretty interesting because this is the percentage allocated. So this guy's 8 times bigger than it was allocated to be, almost 9 times bigger. And quite a few of them are beyond where they were designed to be. Also tells you what the rows per block is for the area, what the cluster size is. So for those who don't know, type 2 area, the difference between a type 2 area and a type 1 area is determined by what the cluster size is. If the cluster size is 864 or 512, it's a type 2 area. If the cluster size is 0 or 1, it's a type 1 area. Type 1 areas are old school. That's from the beginning of time with Progress. And basically, everything is all mixed together. Type 2 areas keep things separate in, what's that word you like to use for it, Rich?
Segregated.
Yeah. Asocial. Asocial, thank you.
I don't use asocial.
Somebody does. I don't know where that came from, but. So type 2 areas are better. Everybody should use type 2 areas. Is there anybody who's not using type 2 areas?
Stop asking that, you're embarrassing.
Well.
You're just doing it for effect now, I know.
Well, hopefully your boss will listen to the tape and realize that this is a...
Your boss doesn't know what a type 2 storage area is.
But he'll know...
That's when you sit down on the potty.
Okay, we'll cut that from the tape. Tells you other interesting things about the area, like whether or not you, how many tables you have in it, how many indexes are in it, how many lobs are in it. This can be really helpful when you're trying to determine have you properly separated your indexes, your tables, your lobs, that kind of thing, and whether or not it's using variable extents. The star over here will tell you, what does that tell you? Darn it, I forgot.
Is that if you have a mix of objects in one area?
I think so, yes, thank you. I think that's right. I forget how these things work sometimes. Another fun little configuration. Oops, wrong one. So this is not quite far enough over. This is the BigB guesstimator. So if you're wondering what the impact of setting various values for the buffer cache would be, or what you might expect from changing BigB, This can help you with that. It's sorted, which column am I sorting this by?
By percent.
Oh, okay. Right, so if you set it to 10,000% of the current value, you would be setting it to 575 million. That would be pretty big. You'd be using 4 terabytes of memory. Your database is only 531 gigs, so that's probably what might be called overkill. But the current value is the 100% right here. So basically what it's doing is comparing the current value to various things that you might change. So currently, we're using 43 gigabytes of memory, which is a little less than 10% of the data, well, it's 8.26% of the database. And our hit ratio tends to be about 1,700 to 1, miss ratio of something like that. So these are pretty good numbers. You know, we're pretty happy with this big B. But if we wanted to make performance worse, we could take some of that memory away and give it to something that doesn't really need it, like the file system buffer cache, and make it 10% of what it is, 575,000. So big B, 575,000. How many people think that's a big value? Okay, all right, I got a couple of people saying that's big. All right. So it used to be that was a huge value. It wasn't all that long ago. That was a really big value. So if you've got a database that nobody's looked at for a long time, you might find a value like that or smaller. If you did that, though, what would happen is your hit ratio would go way down, and your miss ratio, or the number of times you have to hit disk, would go up. So let's pull it back over and see what the other side of the screen looks like. Well, I guess we didn't have to go that far. There we go. So the impact of that would be that you'd probably do a bunch more OS reads than you're doing right now. And the relationship between big B and disk reads is an inverse square relationship. So you have to make really big changes to have a perceptible impact on things. And that's basically what this is trying to show you. It runs through that calculation and says, well, right now you're doing 655. If you make it a lot smaller, you're going to do a couple of thousand. If you throw just a little bit more memory in it, it's not going to make any difference at all. If you throw all the memory in the world in it, you stop having any impact at all once you get bigger than the database size. Because once you have enough memory to hold the whole database, you're not going to do any disk I.O. after everything's in memory, pretty much. Well, your writes will go out to disk, but your reads won't have any impact. So that's a cool thing you can do with Protop. Okay, back to the dashboard. And get rid of that. Table activity we already talked about. Table index. So a lot of times when you're looking at the table activity, part of what you want to know is, am I using the indexes that I expect to be using? So you see the AP trans is really busy, but what index is being used? So we see that AP trans doc is the major index that's being used at the moment. There might be others that show up, but the major one is clearly this app trans doc for now. Or you look at this guy here who's in this rapid turnaround thing, look group. Well, which one's that? Look group dot look group. Then you go back to the code and say, is that what I expect? Is that something different? You can get a lot of interesting information out of doing that. This is sometimes more, well, it's always useful in production, but this is one of those things that you can take back to the development side of the shop and before things are released into production, make sure that they're matching up with what your expectations are. So you can set up Protop in your development environment, have your developers at least make a token effort to see what's going on and make sure it's clear. And that can be pretty helpful too. If you want to change the sort order of these columns, because maybe the process that you're checking is a purge process or something like that, so you're more interested in deletes, there's a way to do that. The command is Z, because I couldn't use S, it was being used for something else. And that lets you scroll through the various displays. So if we wanted to check or modify the index activity, we go there. And then the left arrow and the right arrow key let you cycle through the columns that you can sort by. So we want to look at deletes, change that there, and then and all that's explained down here. And then just save that, go back here.
Is there a control table for that?
A control table.
Is there a table where I can go in and set those the way I want them set,
okay,
and have them saved? So every time I come into ProTop,
we do. We do have there is an enhancement request portion of the discussion coming up. But yeah,
it's open source. You can do it yourself.
That's right. But so as you can see,
I can read Tom's code. That was the question.
Hey, my code.
I'm a developer. I can read anybody's code.
So as you can see, we're sorting by delete now. So that was pretty simple to do. It was easy to get in there, set that up, and make that happen. What's another good one to take you through? So let's get rid of that. That. No, I said to get. So sometimes I have this problem with it eating my command keystrokes. I'm not sure whether that's a problem with this RDP connection or a ProTop problem.
It is a ProTop issue because I'm getting it back in my office as well.
I keep trying to solve that.
It's when it's reading from the
keyboard.
When you press the keyboard, it's a delay between the display and when your read loop is.
Well, I'm probably missing a process events or something like that. So this is user IO activity. I got rid of all the other screens so that it would come up to the top. Oops, not quite far enough. So because this customer is running version 11, they have multi-tenancy available. So this is not a multi-tenant database, so all the tenant numbers are zero. But if this was a multi-tenant database, it would show you, yes?
Something popped in my head. Do you got any screens in ProTop that will show any temp table activity now?
No. I'd have to have some sort of connection to the client and communication back from the client to ProTop. I occasionally make feature requests that might help with that, but so far they haven't been delivered. I might have something to say about that later this afternoon. But anyway, so because this is version 11, multi-tenancy is a possibility, so there is some support to show you some multi-tenant information. It'll show you the tenant number, it'll show you in the name, you'll have the new user at domain kind of displays going on. This process ID can be very helpful if you need to go out to the operating system to kill a session or find out more information about it from that level. The flags, the S means it's a self-service connection. Star means that there's a transaction active. Yes?
That PID, if you're running client server.
Yeah.
What is that PID number?
I believe that's the PID on the client.
Yeah.
It doesn't help you on the server side, but it's the remote PID. Block access, so basically the default sort is who's hitting the database the most. Hit percent, da 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 da. And then over on the far side, we have some interesting stuff. Line number and program name. So if you enable the client statement cache, this will display what line number of what program that user was executing when the sample was taken. That can be really, really useful, particularly if you're having a performance problem, you're not sure where in the code it's coming from. Enable the client statement cache, which you can do in ProMon, or I'm not going to do it here because this is a 1,000 user system and this is production, but ProTop will allow you to enable it dynamically. So you hit the splat key and it will enable it for everybody.
Asterisk.
Looks like a bug that's been splatted.
Okay.
I'm not going to do that because this is production and I don't want to mess around. But if there was a problem going on, that's one of the diagnostics that we might use to get to the bottom of what's happening. And that's a great feature. It's probably the best feature that Rich has added in, I don't know how long, a good long time.
Is that an enable and disable?
Yes. Yes, goes both ways.
Through ProTop, it's...
Can you enable it by user?
Yeah, so one of the nice things about enabling it through ProMon is that you can just do one user. So you can, if you know which user is causing your problem, you can go in there, you can just enable it for that one user, and do that through ProMon. Actually, you can do it when we drill down into a user as well on the ProTop side. But either way, and that'll work. And you can do it for several users. You can, you know, you can come up with various schemes there. Okay, where am I? One of the other things that's always fun to look at. Is latch activity. So if you have one of these larger systems that has enormous amounts of activity and you're interested in what's happening with the latches and the resources, the internal database resources that control concurrency, you might want to look at latches. So the latch and the resource screens are kind of bound together because they usually are closely associated. And this will show you which latches have the most requests, or you can sort on weight or weight percent. And weight is actually the new default, but that's not what's here. And that way, you might get some insight into where a bottleneck is occurring. Because if you have a system that's been well-tuned and you don't have a lot of I.O., then your bottlenecks tend to move into memory and the access to shared memory. And that'll show up in the latch weights. And depending on which latch it is that you might have weights for, there are various strategies that you could employ to resolve that bottleneck. One of the things that was a problem in the past was this LRU latch. If you had very, very high read activity, you would tend to bottleneck on the access to LRU. LRU skips is a relatively new parameter that allows you to tune how often that gets checked, and makes most of those sorts of bottlenecks less of a problem than they were in the past. But there are other sorts of bottlenecks depending on what your situation is, what your application is doing. This can give you a lot of insight into how those are going. So, get rid of that. Who is logged in? So this is a little bit less focused. This is users, but not focused on their activity so much as just who they are, which can be a helpful kind of a thing to know. What are we sorted by? Oh, we're just sorted by user number, descending. So that's not exactly the most useful sort order. But if you're just trying to get a handle on who's logged in, how many there are, probably more useful on smaller systems than on bigger ones. What might be a good thing to sort on sometimes is session duration. You see we've got this user who's been on for 4 days.
Okay.
That might be a little excessive.
35 days. One of my user screens, man.
That's just one busy person.
Well, these are also, some of them are batch, but that one's not batch.
So 35 days down there at the bottom.
Yeah, some, that's some manager somewhere.
Those entries is the same user multiple times.
Well, and the other thing is, you know, we have these unnamed users. I hate it when people have unnamed users. Please name your users. And give them unique names. Don't make them all the same. Another fun screen is checkpoints. There we go. So it keeps track of what's been going on with your checkpoint activity, which is always loads of fun. These guys are not too bad. There's a nice gap in between them. Good long time. So their BI cluster size is set kind of large-ish, so they don't have a rapid turnaround on their checkpoints. We're not flushing any buffers. I don't know. Looks pretty good to me. Rich, what do you think?
Is that okay? I just noticed your BIWs and AIWs, they're twice the writes on your AIW writes, twice the writes.
Because the block size is different.
That could be.
Could be block size, could be variable length extents, could be lots of things. That's why I was wondering earlier, the gentleman asked what the colors meant. I just meant that was a violation.
Yeah, well, the red is definitely supposed to be a violation. I forget what I was doing with blue.
The block size was 16K on both AI and BI on your previous screen.
The buffers are different.
There is a different number of buffers, yes.
Is that a five-hour checkpoint?
Yeah, it was in the middle of the night. It was,
it comes up on the screen.
So it's 2 o'clock in the morning to 8 o'clock. But that's the time between when the checkpoint started and when it finished, so it's not, the user didn't have to wait 5 hours. You know how checkpoints start, you open the checkpoint and then stuff gets written, and then it all has to be flushed by the end. It's okay if it's a long checkpoint, as long as users didn't have to wait for that whole thing.
How are the durations?
Hmm?
How are the durations?
Let's take a look. I think that's off on the right. So this is the time they had to wait over here. It's not bad. Kind of related is active transactions. So these are the transactions that are active. By default, it's sorted on duration. So we have one transaction, which I think we mentioned earlier, that's now up to 1 hour and 10 minutes, another one at 45 minutes, and so on and so forth. There's an email coming from a slightly different system that goes to this customer that lets them know if they have anything that goes over 3 hours, and then he starts killing people. Literally.
We've done something like that. We used to send email alerts for 1.5 hours.
Yeah.
And that went fine, and then we started for a certain group of remote users that we don't have control over, good control over. Then we put in a process later to actually disconnect them off after a period, because it's too impossible to deal with otherwise.
Yeah, this customer prefers to do that manually. We could do it automatically for them, but it's... they're more comfortable with a manual.
That's the real reason for the little orange thing you had yesterday, right?
Yeah. But the way the data is organized here is pretty helpful, because you have the process ID. The device tells you a lot about whether it's a local user. If there's an IP address there, then it's a remote client. And the transaction number. So if you do have to go out to the operating system to kill them or something like that, you have everything you need right there. Which is very helpful. And that. I don't know if we'll have any luck with this next bit, because it kind of depends on bad stuff happening. But we're going to try to look at blocked users. So if we get a blocked user, we'll see that. Hello? There we go. Oh, we got a couple. Okay. So blocked users are users that are... wasn't fast enough.
You did your job too well. So.
They're waiting on some resource. Most of the time... I paused it, I hope. Most of the time, they're going to be waiting on, it's usually a record lock. Which this is not. This is a BKSH wait. So they're waiting for access to a shared memory block. But that just means that there's a lot of contention. But you saw how they come and go. So this isn't really a problem. If somebody had been blocked on that for a long time or was being consistently blocked on that, that would be something you would worry about. But most of the time when you see blocked users show up here for extended periods, it's going to be record locks. and you'll get some information in the note area about what table and what rec ID it is that they're being blocked on. So that's kind of helpful when you're trying to figure out where in the application is this occurring. Hopefully it doesn't happen a lot in production, but I know a lot of QAD systems that I work with, we sometimes have these issues with people locking up on SOD or something like that. Comes up a lot.
Is this sort of on who's at the top of the list starting the problem?
Duration.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's the default sort. You can sort on whatever you want. So you saw that there's a pause key. So if something interesting does come up while you're monitoring, you hit P before it goes away. And that gives you a little bit more time to pay attention to what's happening there. There is also another command, I think it's going to work. Hope it's going to work. There we go. Okay, so the M key will send out an email. By default, it's going to tell it to come to me. And basically, it's going to say, hey, if you got time, can you take a look at this? And then it's going to dump all the Promon screens to a text file, append them to that mail message, and send them off to whoever you've got here. That is configurable. There's an email config file in Etsy, so if you'd rather have it come to yourself, you can set that up. But by default, it's going to send me an email, and I'm going to look at it and say, well, I don't really have time for it. Yeah, sure, I got plenty of time today. I'll take a look at that. If you have a firewall that blocks that sort of thing, I'll never see it. So if I'm not responding, it could be that I'm having fun at Pug Challenge, or it might be that your firewall is blocking it. And you can either send it or abort it. I'm going to abort this. So one last feature to look at here. We see this user 902, we'll experiment with user 902 because I just saw them. So I want to look at a particular user. The hash key lets you put in a user number that you'd like to see more about. So I want to see more about user 902. And then capital U lets me drill down into, if it doesn't eat my keystroke, lets me drill down into everything that user is doing. There we go. So this gives me some specific information about that user. Their name, what the number is, the connect ID. So one of the neat things about VSTs is that the user number and the ID number that a lot of VSTs use, they're off by one. So if you start doing a little bit of VST programming, you might get tripped up by that if you're not aware of that. So because I do a lot of VST programming, I like to know what those numbers are. It helps me validate that I'm doing the right thing. You got the operating system PID. If it's a remote connection, you'll know what server it is, what type it is, transaction going on. This phone number and email comes out of the underbar user file. There are a couple of new fields in there for that. Well, I don't know how new they are. They've been around for a while. And then what the session's activity levels are over there. So if somebody seems to have a whole lot of activity, you would see that being reflected here. This user actually isn't doing much of anything. So I didn't pick a very good one. And then for the session, not for the entire database, but just for this user, these are the tables and indexes that are getting the most traffic. So if somebody's calling up and complaining that they seem slow and you want to know what they're doing, this gives you a lot of insight into what exactly they're doing. It also gives you a really nice ability in development to be able to make sure that the numbers you're looking at are specific to the thing that you're testing. So look at your own user when you're trying to test something in development, and this will help you to do that. If you have the client statement cache enabled, this gives you the same information we were talking about earlier, only it's a little bit wider format because it's less compressed. And then you'll get a list of the other sessions that the same user ID has logged in. So sometimes you have this issue where people log in multiple times, they call up the help desk and they say, I'm stuck. Which version of you are we talking about? So that's always helpful to know.
Is this where you said you could press the asterisk, or just this one user?
Yeah, but I'm not going to.
Well, I know you're not going to. That's
yeah, you should. You're supposed to be able to do that here. Yeah.
So is there a way to control the refresh rate once you're in here?
Yes, yes. So one of the features on the, let's go back to the help screen. Go back to the help screen. There we go. So these are the things towards the top tend to be the database metrics and that kind of thing. Down towards the bottom is stuff that's more about controlling Protop. So the user number, the hash mark is what we just did. You could also do it by process ID rather than user number. The refresh interval is capital I. So capital I will bring up a little window, say how many seconds do you want the refresh interval to be. Sort columns, Z. Client statement cache is splat. If you don't have a DB analysis, so remember I said at the beginning, if there's a DB analysis, Protop will use that information. You can generate one with capital A. So it'll go out there and it'll just run DB analysis in the background, put it in the right place, take care of that for you. You can switch between sampling automatically, so there's that refresh interval, or having to press a spacebar every time you want to do it. That's an option as well. Talked about the email. That's the M command, pause command, help, and quit. So that's pretty much everything. Yes?
We have, normally our application uses half a dozen different databases, based upon recoverability needs and some other stuff. How readily can you set this up, when you need, when really, when I got a problem, unfortunately, that's the one downside is I've got to go look at multiple databases. I mean, I can take a guess at which one it's probably going to be in, but, it can vary.
Protop looks at one database at a time. Okay. So,
but can in terms of putting it on the system, can I readily put it on the system and do the appropriate configurations and whatnot so that,
It's real simple. The install program just asks you, where are you installing it? Where can I find progress? And then there are a couple of different ways to script it. There's a bin/protop script that you can modify and you can set up. You have a little menu in there. There's also a config file where you can just list out aliases or nicknames, I should say, for your databases. And that just gives you a short name that maps to the full path name. And then so protop, MFG, protop, help, whatever, that kind of thing.
And can you mentioned, all the way you mentioned Etsy and Snap, do you have the ability to put the stuff, ideally I like to keep things that aren't part of the operating system as separate from the operating system as possible.
This is Protop slash Etsy.
Oh, Protop Etsy.
It's not the system Etsy.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes?
Documentation?
This is what you just got.
I'm sorry, Mark. Did you volunteer?
dbappraise.com.
There you go. Actually, the DB Appraise webpage does have a fairly extensive layout of what's available and what the list is.
I'm specifically referring to some of the values of some of those columns, like the short names you have for the.
It doesn't cover them all, but it does cover quite a few of them. I haven't updated it lately. other questions? Enhancement requests? It's perfect. Yes.
On the lock screen for the user, it's a record lock. It says what table is locked.
It will try to tell you. There are some restrictions on how far it will go with that because some parts of that query can be painful. But usually it will try to tell you what table and what record.
It'll tell you has it locked?
Yeah, so part of the restriction is how far it will go with that. I'm trying to remember exactly what that looks like. I think it's table name, rec ID, and then a list of user numbers. I think. Don't hold me to it.
I guess we'll test it.
Yeah. Yes?
What is this written in?
4GL.
4GL?
Yeah.
These screens, they look...
That's plain old, ordinary, everyday 4GL.
I look surprised, right?
Yeah. Well, because it's so much real estate, so real estate that he has.
Oh, you came in a little bit late. I no longer use 24 by 80. There's been no excuse for anybody to use a 24 by 80 screen for 20 years. Stop it already. So it's 132 by 48 at a minimum. If you have more lines, ProTop will happily use them. And I personally often run with 100 lines. So, yes?
Is there a way to collect the metrics over the course of time? So I can do
that? That's called DB Appraise, and we charge for that. This is the free product. However, having said that, the Hooglu project that we were talking about earlier this morning, we are going to try to find some way to have the traffic between the agents and the client. We'll be going over that infrastructure, and we're going to be looking at possible models for in-app purchase type of things where, you know, maybe you're monitoring something for an hour this afternoon, and for 99 cents we'll collect up your data and graph it for you. I don't know. We're kicking ideas around.
I'd buy that for a dollar.
You'd buy it for a dollar?
No, I'd buy that for a dollar.
How about a Benjamin? Other questions?
You need to look at how bad the performance is in that time frame and then you know how much to charge for it.
That's a really great idea. Okay, well, thank you very much.